This is a Crowd podcast.
Steven Gerrard, England and Liverpool legend. 700 appearances for Liverpool, 114 caps for England. He's won two FA Cups, three League Cups, a UEFA Cup and a Champions League. Plus, just won the league as Rangers manager. Topical. And of course, author. But let's see what the book club and this week's guest, Glenn Moore, thought of his book on this week's Football Book Club.
You guys ready for a classic game of Chinese whispers? Turn off the lights!
He didn't once fold someone in half and put them in a bin.
Who do you sue? Do you take the bush to court?
Hello and welcome to Football Book Club, the only book club where, instead of literary classics, each week we read another footballer's autobiography. Less H.G. Wells, more Naki Wells. I'm James Burke, and over the weeks, we'll be reading classics such as Brian Gunn's In Where It Hurts and Gordon Strachan's My Life in Football. But today, we're reading Steven Gerrard's 2006 book, My Autobiography, and reading it with me, Ajab Bernhardt.
Hello.
James Baljan.
Hello.
And please welcome star of Mock the Week and the stand-up sketch show, comedian and writer, Glenn Moore.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Now, of course, Steven has just won the league with Rangers. But that's not the reason you chose this book, Glenn. Why, oh why, did you choose Steven Gerrard's My Autobiography?
It was the second football autobiography I ever read in my life. I think the first one I ever read was Gazza's, which my mum read. And then she was like, I think you'd really enjoy this. And I loved Gazza's autobiography because it felt like it was written by Gazza. And it made sense, and you fully got inside his head. And then shortly after that, I then read Steven Gerrard's autobiography, and Steven Gerrard is my favourite player of all time. I think he is a complete player. I absolutely adore Steven Gerrard, so I just couldn't wait to read his book. I was so excited. I think I got it the day it came out. I was so excited to read it.
Wow.
And I'm not a Liverpool fan. Not a Liverpool fan.
I was going to say, you're a Sheffield Wednesday fan, right?
Yeah, Sheffield Wednesday supporter, yeah.
I know.
I think when I first got into football, having played Pro Evo 3 around a friend's house, yep. The game with Pierluigi Collina blowing a whistle on the front cover
On
the front cover in a game where there were no referees. Pro Evo didn't have referees back in the day. The referee wasn't on the pitch. They didn't actually include linesmen until about 2008. I feel like I was an England fan before I was a club fan. I first got into football round about Euro 2004.
Okay.
And England's pretty decent showing at Euro 2004. I know it was a quarterfinal exit, but there were so many goals. It was the introduction of Wayne Rooney.
And Darius Vassell on the international stage.
And Darius Vassell, of course, missing the penalty. Yeah, of course. So basically, I think from when I followed the Premier League afterwards for at least a couple of seasons after that, I kind of looked at the England players. This is going to make me sound like an insane nationalist, but I think I was excited about any team that had one of England's squad on there, because it'd be sort of like, okay, even if this guy has scored two past the team I support, this can only be good for the England squad.
Oh.
I think that was the mentality I had.
Oh, wow.
I think
that's fascinating.
Yeah. You're like one of those guys who, what's your feeling on like Champions Leagues and stuff when English clubs are in there? Are you one of the ones who always want them to stay in? Okay.
Yes.
I'm the opposite. I'm always like, no, unless it's Tottenham, get out. That's why.
I think it was Liverpool's journey in 2005. So I think that was when I really started to probably be like, oh, Liverpool are fucking brilliant. And it was all because of Steven Gerrard.
Wow.
And I think the first time I ever saw him was probably, it must have been the 5-1 victory over Germany. And I think it was Gerrard who equalised. But I remember as the first time I'd ever seen Steven Gerrard play, and I was just absolutely transfixed by he played in the way that I was just completely fascinated by footballers playing. I think it's purely scoring goals from 30 yards. I think that's what it is. But I was completely transfixed by Steven Gerrard, and not just because I'd never seen someone who doesn't have a forehead before, but I think I was just... it was just the way he played. I just thought it was absolutely incredible. And from then, I feel like I supported Steven Gerrard as opposed to like an actual team.
What he lacks in forehead, he makes up for in passion.
Exactly. It feels like, he feels like a Sims character. You know what? You could have like maximum charisma, but if you did that, you'd have to like lower intelligence and stuff like that. I feel like Steven Gerrard had like maximum footballing ability, but like zero for forehead. You had to sort of bring that stat down.
I was getting worried for a bit that you're far too pure for this show, Glenn, but now we're finally pushing you a little bit towards that kind of side. Also, does your mum fancy coming on an episode? Sounds like she's read loads of football autobiographies.
No, it was just Paul Gascoigne. That was the only one she read, because I think she was just literally just Gazza. She reads autobiographies more than she reads novels. She's just fascinated by autobiographies. It's all she reads all the time. And and Paul Gascoigne, I think, was the only sporting one she'd ever read. But I think that then misled the rest of the family into thinking she was into it. So what then followed for a couple of Christmases afterwards was her receiving disappointing gift after disappointing gift of autobiographies of like snooker players she'd never fucking heard of in her life. I mean, eventually we sort of got weaned off that because she had to eventually basically have an intervention with the rest of us to be like, you must stop doing this. I don't know who these people are.
Please stop sending me Ronnie O'Sullivan's autobiography.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I may as well go on Wikipedia and choose random article and just read that from top to bottom. I don't know who the fuck these people are. So yeah, it was only Paul Gascoigne.
Can I say, you made Paul Gascoigne's autobiography sound really, really, really good.
You did,
much better
yeah.
than maybe the one that we've read this week.
Paul Gascoigne's is so fascinating. And get this, it's so fascinating, and it doesn't even reach Raumo. That's how fascinating Paul Gascoigne's wow. autobiography is.
So, just to be clear, we're reading Stephen Gerrard's 2006 autobiography.
Yeah, we are. We are reading Stephen Gerrard's. Yeah, yeah.
And as the and also not even his latest 2015 book, My Story. We're going all the way back to 2006 for his My Autobiography. And as it says, Stephen Gerrard's book is the definitive football autobiography. Like its subject, it's honest, passionate, and exhilarating. If Stephen Gerrard isn't your hero yet, by the time you've read this, he will be. And let's see if that applies to the podcast too. Yeah. Should we see what Amazon's saying about the book?
Mm.
Cool.
Yes.
Thanks, Jack. The book has 4.6 stars from 328 ratings. That's a lot. That is a lot of ratings for that book.
That is a lot of ratings.
In comparison, last Neil Redfern had 10.
But when you consider hero to millions, very few of those millions have flocked to his defense on Amazon. If you consider that it's just 300 or so people.
Yeah.
It's a lot. It's still a lot. I reckon most people haven't read the book. That's my perception.
So, also, just for context, the Neville's book we read last week had one review. So, and that came out 25 years ago. So
from the other Neville.
Yeah. This book, though, has 328 reviews, including this 3-star review from Simon, which reads, "I thought it was drivel, but my son liked it." So, did you all like it? And more importantly, did your sons like it? Glenn, we'll start with you.
Well, I'm without child, and I've got to say... you know, I was saying earlier about Gazza that I was like, the best thing about Gazza's autobiography was you were so aware that this is all his experience, his lived experience, it's being written in his voice. I read this when it came out, so I must have been about 16, 17 or so.
Sure.
And I wasn't even really familiar with the term ghostwriter, but my God, I wasn't convinced at any point that a single word had been penned by Stephen Gerrard.
Really?
And I think I was excited to read it because... At that time, I had no indication of what Stephen Gerrard's personality was because it's a problem with any Premier League footballer, really, but all you really see of him is in press conferences afterwards, and there's no indication of what a personality is because they've been drilled by the press team, save a specific sentence, and then occasionally they really come out of their shell afterwards and you get a real gem like Jamie Carragher, who was boring as hell as a player, but that was only because he was being told what to say, and then as soon as he became a pundit afterwards, became really interesting, really insightful, has a great personality. Mm-hmm. And the bar is very, very low. But even though I had no idea what Stephen Gerrard's personality was, I was like reading this thinking, this isn't it. This is not
that is it.
Him.
See, I thought the opposite. Compared to some of the ones we've read, it did feel a lot like the way he spoke, I thought, some of it. It was very... You know, stilted sentences all the way through it. It was maybe it was just the style that tricked me into thinking that. But to me, it felt very Gerrard-esque.
I think it is the style because he does speak that way. But some of the content, like at one point he says "hellfire," I was like, Stephen Gerrard definitely
absolutely not. Yeah, yeah.
No way.
The most I believed him was when he's talking about in Istanbul,
yes,
in the 2005 Champions League final. Uh-huh. He's talking about Didi Haman taking the penalty. And he said, "I laughed afterwards when Didi casually remarked he'd played with a broken foot. Didi, you could play with two bus feet, you move so little." I joked. But no, Didi's class. And I found that sentence in particular so stupid because it was such a crap sort of like, it's like when someone leaves your house and you go, "Fine, we're going to get some bloody peace and quiet." Nah, just kidding, mate. Have a good time. It's such a shit joke. It's so shit and lacking in personality. But I was like, there he is. That's our man. He's just poked through for a sentence there.
That's so funny. I love that.
It felt like, the only way I can compare it to is like if you ever went on like a Tinder date or a Bumble date with someone who didn't look like their pictures, and halfway through the date, they turn their head slightly and for a split second, they look like the person you matched with, and you go, oh shit, there you are, literally for three words. That's what the autobiography felt like. For none of it, I was like Stephen Gerrard. I mean, for one sentence, it was like, there he is, there's our man.
Can I just say, this book has the most horrible start I've ever read in a book.
Yep.
About him kicking a discarded garden rake in a bush when he's a child, and it getting lodged in his toe. Oh, I winced my way through the first 50 pages.
It is disgusting, but it also smacked of a ghostwriter going, did anything happen in the first 15 years of your life? And he goes, well, I trod on a rake once, like Sideshow Bob, and he's like, let's make something of this. But the idea of framing it as like my career was nearly over before it began, it was like, no, it wasn't.
I mean,
no, it wasn't.
He almost had his toe
amputated. We've seen footballing injuries. That was nothing. You trod on a rake like a cartoon character, you fool.
I mean, in fairness, there's very few rakes on the pitch in matches. They're like, when you compare it to actual injuries, like Jibril Cissé didn't like go over a hoe at some point. Like, it's not.
I missed that Danny Baker video. Where just, the all rake Danny Baker video.
Yeah. But it is
one of the most disgusting. It's horrible. It's one of the most disgusting descriptions of anything I've ever read.
Every few pages are just.
The thing is, because Glenn, you're right, he is effectively stepping on a rake, but the way he describes it is also really stupid. It's like the ball goes into some nettles and he's like, I know what I'll do. I'll kick it out. So he just starts wildly kicking into these nettles.
That's what I would do. So I'm not putting
my hand in there.
That's not
what you do. You
wouldn't kick it nettles. You wouldn't kick the nettles.
I'll kick the nettles. I've learned nothing from this book.
his is a childhood of pain and like trying to be as painful as possible. I can't remember if it's in this book, or if I read it in an interview with Stephen Gerrard separately, but about the gloves, wearing the gloves to match incident. So basically, his dad used to obviously take him to football matches every weekend for him to play, like Little League and stuff like that. And when he was about 7 years old, it was like February, he's freezing cold. Stephen Gerrard put on a pair of gloves for the match, and his dad was so ashamed, he left, and Stephen Gerrard had to make his own way home.
Oh my God.
That was in an interview with Stephen Gerrard years ago. Yeah, and it was like, oh God! Okay, that's a dated.
Yeah,
that's very dated, isn't it?
That's a,
yeah, yeah. Your dad's got issues as opposed to you, Stephen. It's fully your dad.
Oh, I feel like you both got some issues there to resolve. Really, that's group therapy. That
his dad also at one point in the book sees him wearing a Brian Robson shirt outside and like yells at him and says, "Get indoors now!"
Yeah, it's genuinely like it's like sort of a moment in like Billy Elliot where the dad.
It's
like,
so fucking Billy Elliot. Yeah, exactly.
That's a really good point.
What are you doing dancing? What are you doing looking like Brian Robson?
All I want to talk about is a nice, wholesome rake injury. And now we're
he literally, what he actually does with the fork, because it's a big garden fork, just kicks
it. Yeah, rake,
it,
I think kicks, I'm underplaying it by saying rake.
He kicks a massive garden fork, and he describes that some nugget had left a fork there, which is such a great description.
Classic nugget.
Some nugget. Some little nugget. You stupid fork-leaving nugget. Great.
But he gets compensation for that, which is quite, like, I think that after the surgery is completed, the doctor comes out and he's like, do you know what? That rake shouldn't have been there. He's like, well, obviously it shouldn't have been there. In what context would it ever
be there? Was he talking about
there?
Inside
who,
his toe?
Who do you sue? Do you take the bush to court? try getting compensation from nature, mate. Good luck.
James, what did you make at the beginning of the book?
He was a toe rag, wasn't he? Is one way of putting it.
And he nearly lost his toe.
And I think...
yeah, he had to wear a toe rag for a little bit.
I feel like everyone, apart from his family, probably really hated him when he was a kid. Because he was just such a dickhead.
Yeah. Like,
it's quite funny, but he was just... It's a bit early on where they're just bullying adults, where they just bully some guy because he wears lots of purple.
Yeah.
And there's a bit where I think it's a caretaker, when he's a Liverpool youth at this point, and a caretaker just starts coming in and challenging these 15-year-old lads to arm wrestles, which is very odd.
Mm.
Yeah, I know that bit. And also, don't they he challenges to arm wrestles, and then they, like, as soon as he comes in, this guy seems, it's such a weird bit. As soon as this guy comes into the Liverpool area and says, "Oh, I want to arm wrestle you," they turn off the lights and start hitting him, like, with a towel. They turn off the lights, they start hitting him, and then they hit the one of the, like, players hits the caretaker on the head with a boot, and then, like, the guy starts screaming and says, "Turn the lights back on," and blood is streaming down his face, and this is played for laughs in the book. It's like, we couldn't believe it was so silly.
I think we found this a lot. Footballers just aren't great at pranks. It was quite you must have enjoyed it though, James, the all the chat about the Spice Boys and everything. I liked that side of things, you know, with Redknapp looking after a young Gerrard and stuff, and
I loved that Stevie was so nervous to speak to them, and he looked up to them so much, and then obviously later on he became great pals with them all. But that was really nice, yeah. I thought. And he's cleaning Jamie's boots and was too scared to speak to him. I thought that was really sweet.
Yeah,
you can see that with, you can kind of see where they get the pranks from. Because I think David James at one point gets annoyed at someone, so he chucks him in a bin.
Folds him in half.
Like that. He folds him in half.
Like, where's Grego? Oh, he's in the bin. David James picked it up, folded him in half. And I mean, that sounds like, I mean, to talk about Sideshow Bob stepping on rakes, that sounds like a bit.
Also, because when I hear someone folding in half, I don't think vertically, I think horizontally. So, like, they just caved in.
Oh, horrible.
I wanted, talking about Grego, actually, you mentioned him. Glenn, I wanted to ask you, as a comedian, do you think that Stephen Gerrard's got a career in emceeing at some point? Because there's a moment where Gerrard's talking about some of the classic slams he has of his fellow pros, including Grego's got some shocking gear on. Pretty good. Would you use that on a Friday night at a club?
All his slams, all his heckles, all his put downs feel like they're done in the same tone as that video of Michael Owen in a helicopter over Dubai.
Yes.
It's so naff. And you feel like it's the most loserish person you know recounting what they wish they'd said to someone, and even then, what they've ended up like kicking themselves over, saying, "I wish I'd said that. I wish I'd said to him, 'My mum says I'm twice the man you are.'" It's that you go, "Oh Jesus Christ, man! Oh God!"
That is the great thing.
I'd hate to be you.
They can rewrite history. That is the great thing about autobiographies. But still, you're right. They've still chosen things that aren't that great. Like, tell Gregory dresses like a tramp. This is during a game of Chinese Whispers. That's not really Chinese Whispers either.
Their version of Chinese Whispers, they again turn off the lights. Why do all of their pranks have to happen in the dark? I don't know. Like, are you guys ready for a classic game of Chinese Whispers? Turn off the lights. Why? So weird. But yeah, like it's basically just insulting people in the dark.
Yes.
Which is not the same game at all.
And that seems to be 17 good years of your football career.
You feel like it's the saying it in the dark that builds like an anonymity aspect. But like, I feel like out of a lineup of 7 billion, I could hear a voice and go, "That's Stephen Gerrard." That's Stevie G. Yeah, that's him.
Stephen Gerrard's just told me that I look like Trump. Good, thank you.
Yeah.
Something I want to talk about in the book, which is a era we don't really ever mention, despite having read a lot of footballers around this time. We've read David Seaman's book. And I'm sure Neville's we read last week. Euro 2000, a strange tournament. And Gerrard, actually, I thought this was a really, really good chapter in the book where he was talking about it and how he hated his time there. He was very homesick. But it was interesting hearing someone, you know, as established as Gerrard, maybe not at the time, but now looking back on it, someone as established as Gerrard talking about how much he just hated being in places. You know, Euro 2000 seems like it was a mess. We went out in the group stages, but it's just a tournament I've totally blocked out my mind, really.
All I remember is seeing Nigel Martin for the first time and thinking, "Who the fuck is that? why is that? We're meant to have David Seaman and there's a guy in pyjamas. Who's this?" It was just mad.
That does sound like a really traumatic experience. Like, you're expecting to see David Seaman, but you see Nigel Martin.
I was watching a dream. It was surreal.
No, get away. Get away. Safe hands. Get back, safe hands.
I'd never seen Nigel Martin before. So he looked like, what it felt like was a bit like when you see someone down the street and you go, "Oh, that's my friend John." And as you get closer, you realise, "Oh, that's not my friend John." And as you get closer, you go, not only does that not look John, not only is that not John, They now just look like a really weird version of John. And that's what Nigel Martin felt like. He felt like, yeah, he nearly looks like a footballer.
Not even David Seaman just doesn't look like a footballer to you.
No, it's just David Seaman looks so specific.
Yeah, I think
David Seaman feels like, you know, in the same way that like Mufasa's death in The Lion King is a really good way of teaching children about death.
Yeah.
David Seaman felt like he looks like someone out of Guess Who. It was just like no one looks like David Seaman. So it's almost like a good way of teaching children to differentiate between humans.
I was wondering where you were going with that.
David so like Seaman Nigel Martin just looked like everyone's dad.
Imagine
it was
if
like,
Nigel
what the
Martin,
fuck are you?
Like Seaman's injured, right, Nigel, grow a moustache immediately. Yeah. Yeah. You're starting next week. You've got 3 days to grow a moustache. But it was fascinating. And there was actually a genuine, like, we do dramatic readings of the book and we usually choose the least dramatic moment. There's actually a really good bit where Gerard's pulled his calf or something, I think, in the game against Germany. So he knows he can't play against Romania in the crucial game. And the way he sits down with Keegan, and Keegan comes across really well in the book. Everyone seems to love him, apart from, well, Gerard loves him. Owen hates him because he keeps subbing him. Yeah, there's a really good bit where he sits down with Kevin Keegan. He like he knows that if he doesn't mention it, he's going to get in more trouble. But he also really, really wants to play because he's young and he's the new up-and-coming star of the England team. Yeah, and I generally thought
that was a really
good
bit.
It was really good. I really felt really that tension all the way through. And
I love
no joke
Kevin
at the end
Keegan's
of it. Book. I generally just really, liked liked that segment.
I think that bit was really interesting. And I think Kevin Keegan in this book comes across really well. He also comes across really weird in a lot of the book.
Yeah,
in
the sense just that turn the lights off before meeting. And
he's got some rubbish gear on, hasn't he, lads?
I'd love it if we turn the lights off. I'd love it if we turn them off.
But he does really weird things. Like, he sort of, like, he loves Stephen Gerrard, like, to a degree that I had not realised.
Yeah.
There are, everyone's sitting in the canteen, and it's Gerrard's first day with the England squad. And Kevin Keegan, like, gets up and says, "This is Stephen Gerrard. He is the greatest player to ever play for England. He'll be incredible." And all the players, like, who is this guy? And Stephen Gerrard's like, "Oh my God." But
Dad.
Kevin Keegan, there's just so many great bits, like, in training. Like, Stephen Gerrard goes round him with a very easy, like, turn, and Kevin Keegan's like, "Wow, did you guys see that? Look at him, he's so amazing." And you're like, "Okay, Kevin, just chill out." Just
also,
chill
you're forgetting
out.
Gareth Barry was there as well, and he doesn't really mention Gareth Barry.
He doesn't mention Gareth Barry.
Yeah. My favorite bit about all the England stuff is when he first gets called in as sort of just to train with them. He's not in the squad, and he's about 17 at this point, I think, or 18. He's very young. And he goes away with them, and I can't remember where they're staying, but they've all, you know, he's in a hotel room for the first time. And do you remember this bit? And Martin Keown just knocks on his door. Do you remember this?
Oh my God, this is my favourite bit as well. Yes.
And it is my favourite bit of the whole book. I read it out to my brother, the whole thing, so I was like, how weird is this? And Martin Keown was just like, "Oh, all right, mate. I don't know if you want to just go shopping or something, just or if anything you need, just give me a knock. I'll be in my room." Jared goes, "Says, do you want to come shopping with me? Do I?" And then they go shopping in London together.
Yeah, that's it. He says, "Do you want to go on a trip around London?" And he doesn't go into more depth about that story. I would love to see Martin Keown and Stephen Gerrard going around Hamleys together. I think that'd be such a lovely chapter.
It's weird that bit, because when he first describes Martin Keown, he says he is probably the funniest man I've ever met in my life, no joke. And then about three sentences later, he goes, "Yes. It was just terrible, but I used to laugh anyway." Is he funny or is he not?
I can't trust
funny?
You at all.
He did it once, fold someone in half and put them in a bin.
It's very interesting. This whole book is fascinating, genuinely, because like he is probably one of the most successful players we've ever read a book of.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, he's won European Cup. He's the all action. Player. He's fantastic.
Yeah.
But there is, throughout the book, there is a pervading sense of like pettiness and bitterness, like that sort of seems to just constantly follow him about. Like, even we're talking about, you know, him being in the England squad when he first started, you know, playing for Liverpool. He didn't get called up for where he was going to be called up for Lilleshall, which is like the centre of excellence for England. So in most people's autobiography, especially someone as successful as Stephen Gerrard, what I feel like what the thing would usually be is, I didn't get called up to Lilleshall. to Lillishall.
Yeah.
And that drove me to go on further, and I used that, and I became the player that I am today.
Yeah.
Stephen Gerrard's book, he spends 5, 10, maybe even 15 pages saying how much it annoyed him that he didn't get called up. He's like furious.
More pages than he spends on the 2005 Champions League final.
It is by a long way. It's fascinating how angry he is about it. Like, I've written some of the things down that he said about it.
Oh, please.
My anger at Lillishall's cold shoulder has never recited. I seethed with resentment at their fast-track treatment. I screamed at the TV when they were on, bollocking the commentator as he praised one of the midfielders with the three lines on his shirt. And there is another bit that is...
Jesus, it's like the third verse of Stan. It's mad.
Hey, Lillishall, it's me again. the idea of Lillishall at the end being like, wait a second, that player who got to the Champions League final, it was you. Damn. There's a bit where he thinks that Lillishall will call him, and it's genuinely like, I know we always say this about, you know, it sounds like Partridge, it sounds like Brent, but there is a bit that sounds so much like David Brent, where he says, Lillishall screwed up, and I hoped and prayed every day they would recognise their mistake. Shit, we left out that brilliant kid from Liverpool. What was his name? Gerrard. Let's get him in. Sharpish. It's just like... He imagines these conversations.
It's true. The only difficulty is that Gerrard is generally brilliant. So that's the hard thing.
Oh, no. Absolutely, yeah. He is brilliant, but equally, he was quite short. He wasn't fully developed. And they literally got him in the next year. He literally plays for the under-16s the next year. And he barely mentions it because he's so annoyed that they rejected him the first time.
I never realised quite how big a deal it was, to be honest, to be in this. It's huge for him. Any time he didn't succeed really makes him angry. And I guess that's what makes him such a born winner. But like, he really, really hates anyone who wronged... If you've wronged him in the past, he will never forget. Like, Igor Bishkan is teammate, he calls a tit at one point in the book, which I couldn't believe. He's got to go into training tomorrow, and they're going, what's this in your book, Stephen?
Igor Bishkan reading it sadly, a single tear going down his cheek.
It's weird because he has that whole bit where later on in the book they're negotiating his contract, and it's very stressful with Rafa and the board, and then Rafa's still his manager for another maybe 4 years after this.
He really calls Rafa out quite a lot. Rafa.
That's true.
I found that bit so weird because I found the bits where he was most honest were with like Keegan and stuff like that, moments where the dust has fully settled, he can freely say what he wants. It's like a retired footballer being able to finally be off the leash and go, this is what I thought about a manager. That's Robbie Fowler talking about Sven-Goran Eriksson, where he says, we expected Winston Churchill at halftime against Brazil, we got Ian Duncan Smith. But that's the one bit of the book where he's really brutally honest, because like, there's a strange bit after where they exit the World Cup in 2006, and he talks so diplomatically about Sven in like a way in which he was like, we're expecting a big moment, and Sven said, I'm very disappointed, thank you all, and we said, thank you, Sven, and then we said goodbye, and you go, that's a real politician's answer there. So it felt weird for him to be talking about Rafa Benitez in the way he does in the book.
Yes.
That was a real weird moment of honesty, I thought.
I know what you mean. Yeah, it's
kind of weirdly like inconsistent in that sense. There are some people he slams that you feel like he shouldn't slam.
He can go too far the other way as well. There's a bit when Gary McAllister signs and he walks into the room for the first time and he goes, should I bow? Do I need to bow in front of Gary McAllister when I say it? Do I shake his hand or do I curtsy? I don't know. What do I do in front of Gary McAllister? It's time for this week's Peter Reid Watch.
Peter Reid Watch.
Yes!
Jack, does Peter Reid appear in Stephen Gerrard, My Autobiography?
Peter Reid does appear in Stephen Gerrard, My Autobiography. On page 22, he is mentioned as one of several players who have come from the area that Stephen Gerrard has come from. It says, Highton is famous for producing decent pros like Steve McMahon, Joey Barton, Lee Trundle, Peter Reid,
yes,
Tony Hibbert, Craig Hignett, and David Nugent. That is your Peter Reid Watch.
Peter Reid Watch.
Interesting fact about Peter Reid Watch. Peter Reid is mentioned after Sex and the City's Kim Cattrall.
Who he described mentioned... as the lively one.
The lively one, which is the greatest euphemism of all time.
Do you reckon it's the only book that's ever mentioned David Nugent? Like, ever.
David Nugent's autobiography didn't mention David Nugent.
Although, feel like he doesn't have a Wikipedia article. It's just like his name's a hyperlink, but it's in red.
I reckon it comes up in Kim Cattrall's autobiography.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I came from the same part of Liverpool that produced David Nugent.
We need to read Kim Cattrall's book, actually, see if Peter Reid pops up, genuinely. That could be a good spot.
And there'll be loads more Gerrard after the break, where we'll be discussing that Champions League final.
Hello. Hello there. What voice do you want me to do? We will do a little bit. I'll just do my voice.
Do your voice.
Yeah, thanks.
Hello, I'm Joe Marler. People think I hate people, but I don't.
I actually love interaction with people.
I love finding out what jobs they do and whether I could do what they do. The Joe Marler Show.
Joe Marler Show.
With new episodes every Wednesday.
Welcome back to Football Book Club. Now, we've already discussed young Gerrard, England Gerrard, and angry Gerrard.
But then, of course, towards the end of the book, we get to a segment which Gerrard, I guess, will always be remembered for. And Glenn, I know you had a lot of thoughts on 2005 Istanbul.
I don't think it's controversial to say, in my opinion, is the greatest match of all time. The stakes couldn't be higher. At halftime, it was just so spent. I remember watching it with my dad and us just being like, this is humiliating. This is humiliating to watch. To concede in the opening minute and then to then get two goals from, was it Kaká or Crespo? I can't even remember. Oh, yeah. It was Crespo. It was definitely Crespo. I remember every single waking minute of that match. But just being humiliated and then in the space of like 5 minutes and knowing a friend of mine who was in Istanbul, he said people left the stadium at half time because of a humiliation. I couldn't believe it. You travel all that way and then you'd leave. I was just so excited to hear it from his perspective that, you know, like we've seen every second of this match. And I swear to God, the edition I read when I was a teenager was we went out there all full of hope. We were so excited, but disaster struck. By halftime, we were 3-0 down, but we pulled it back and we beat them. And I remember reading it at the time just like, are you fucking kidding? Where's the rest? And I remember like scrolling through the rest of the pages go, don't go to 2006. Where the fuck is the rest of the match? There was nothing. And then I reread it and I was like, oh, actually, there's like five pages. But in the wider scheme of things, this is a 500-page tome.
Yeah.
He offers nothing. And the thing I find entertaining to this day about his description of that match is when he talks about Shevchenko having that late chance where Shevchenko has two shots on Jerzy Dudek, point-blank range, misses both. But in my opinion, if you watch it back, I think Jerzy Dudek is so close to him, it would have been harder for Shevchenko to score. But that's by the by. The thing I love is that Gerrard says, I truly believe that there was some higher power, some higher force that helped us that night.
Yes.
And I just love the fact that, like, God hates Shevchenko. Do you mean that God didn't want AC Milan to win? Like, ostensibly the more religious team.
Yeah.
Didn't want them to win. Is there a more religious player than Kaká? No. And God was like, fucking man, back off. You've been creeping.
Well, interesting. We read
Jerzy Dudek's book. And Dudek is incredibly religious all the way through. He gets he gives the Pope a shirt with Dudek on the back of it, doesn't he, at some point? John Paul II. Yeah.
And Pope's like, great, thanks.
Maybe that's what tipped it over. That's what tipped God in favour of Liverpool in that match. That's sure.
What's interesting about this description, because obviously we have this example where we can now like compare Dudek with Gerrard's version. In Dudek's version, obviously, that save is the most important bit, with good reason. In Gerrard's book, he kind of seems to imply that God did it and Dudek didn't really have anything to do with it.
Yeah.
But he implies Dudek's this sort of blundering Mr. Magoo character. Yeah. When he sort of goes, do a Bruce Grobbelaar at the end, Dudek's like, and he's like, wobble your legs. And he's like, are my legs? I'm a hands man. And it's surreal how patronising he needs to be to just Dudek at the end.
The way he also says, like, they're going towards the penalties, and he goes, we had a secret weapon. And I was like, oh, now he's going to be kind to Dudek. He said, we had a secret weapon, Carragher, because Carragher told Dudek your secret weapon is Jerzy Dudek, the one who saved the penalties. Mad. Absolutely mad.
I think you've rumbled
it's
goalkeepers
so weird.
Worldwide with that, Glenn. I think anyone's ever described them as handsmen. I'm a handsman.
But what I find really weird is I remember the jokey tone in which commentators at the time described it, and the way Gerrard describes it as well, that when Dudek was on like three occasions in that penalty shootout, meet metres off his line.
Yeah, he was.
The penalty was at point-blank range before they even took the shot.
That's true.
And obviously, I'm not complaining, best match of all time, but like... Yeah, it's really, like, I feel like Gerrard's the only person in this occasion who's like, no, let's cut through Dudek's bullshit here. He was a marionette who we were operating at all times with strings. He had no idea what was going on.
Something I want to talk about from the Champions League final is just how romantically Steven Gerrard describes the cup all the way through, the Champions League trophy. And as opposed to a dramatic reading this week, Jack, could you cue the sexy music for us, please?
Oh, I hate cueing the sexy music.
This week we're doing a sexy reading. Cue it, Jack.
Cue sexy music.
As I inched past the cup that fills the dreams of everyone at Liverpool, my palms flooded with sweat. I felt it call out to me, touch me, feel me. I was mesmerised by it. One glinting trophy, a million memories. I thought of all those great players who touched it before. Kenny Dalglish, Graham Souness, Alan Hansen, Liverpool legends, European Cup winners. I wanted it so badly. Just wanted to take it home, back where the European Cup belongs, Anfield.
Let me touch you with my sweaty palms.
Let me touch you, Kenny Dalglish. Filled, sweating, it's all that, isn't it? It's horrible.
Touch me, Stevie.
Alex says, you gave that cup more kisses in a night than you give me in a year. And he's, I kissed the cup because I wanted to show the world how much it means to Liverpool. And then he literally takes it home for a one-night stand afterwards. He goes...
I remember reading that in the paper the next day that he was like, he slept with the cup.
Yeah.
And it was like... Does. And when he said he slept with a cup... He totally fucked the cup. We know.
He filled that cup.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I love the way that he's, I mean, you're going to say it here, but where he's like, I didn't, look, guys, I didn't, you know, I didn't wake up with the cup, with my legs around the cup. I didn't wake up softly caressing the cup, whispering sweet nothings into its little handles. I didn't do that. You're like, you definitely did, mate.
You've already described it too much, mate. We know what you did.
I think it's because he overexplains it. Like, he's like, no, like, just to be clear, like, I didn't shag it or anything. Like, I didn't, you know, like, it was on one of them, you know, them things where you sort of pull it out, you put things on it, girls do their makeup on it. You're like, yeah, you're, yeah. You can see through this.
It was in front of the mirror, so it was like, there were, you know, it's fine. Yeah, there were two cups, you know, it's fine. Yeah, yeah.
There is literally like a kind of like when you wake up, there's a kind of one of those, did we, you wake up naked. Yeah. There's a bit racist.
What, like a series cliffhanger in Friends.
Yeah, exactly.
But also it's, a real exactly dead hooker vibe that the cup couldn't respond.
Yeah, exactly. He literally says, morning, I said to the cup. I could not remember bringing it back to the room, but then I couldn't remember getting myself back to the room. As soon as I hit the pillow, I was bang asleep.
But also, you just
sure you were
taking it down to breakfast with a baseball cap on the cups and glasses. It's
like, if you were Steven Gerrard, based on how wasted he presumably was, and the fact he went to bed with a cup, and based on the fact of how badly the first half went for them, I think you'd wake up, you'd see the cup next to you, and go, "Did I steal this from Cafu? Are the police looking? Is there a police helicopter outside?" I bet it's like tremendously illegal. Is Yap Stam going to murder me?
He turns to the other side of his bed and he's copped off with Andre Perlo or something like that. He's really dead stuff. Oh, not again.
The thing is, because it's quite a big, like, obviously, that's the, next to the World Cup, that's a bigger scale you can do it on. But I love the idea of someone taking a lesser cup to bed with them. And did anyone do that in 2006 with like the fucking, did like a Barnsley player do this with the Johnston's paint trophy?
Yeah.
The
yeah,
LDV the, Vans trophy.
The Papa John's pizza trophy. Did it change you reading this book?
I remember being disappointed, being so excited to read it and being disappointed that it ended at the end of the 2006 World Cup, which was obviously a tremendous disappointment because even now to this day, I wish FIFA or Pro Evo had a mode where you could choose a year and play with the England squad from that year or the Liverpool squad from that year or whatever.
That's a great question.
And to this day, I'm like...
Spencer Owen when he was on. That's a great
But show. The idea of, like, with the exception of Paul Robinson, the idea of, like, Ashley Cole, Rio Ferdinand, John Terry, Gary Neville, Steven Gerrard, Paul Scholes, Frank Lampard, David Beckham, Michael Owen, Wayne Rooney, it's just it doesn't get better than that. It was so, so good. And I remember being so disappointed that, and this is so irrational, that the book ended with the same experience that I had. And it was like, yeah, we lost to Portugal on penalties again. And so we try again. We go on in the future. And I remember reading the book as if to be like, Oh, wasn't this got a different ending? I thought maybe it would end with you win. Yeah. Or like maybe
that would
a semi-finals exit.
So yeah.
At least, yeah, exactly. Where like he was actually tremendously deluded. And he was like, and we beat Belgium in the end. And it's like, Belgium aren't even in the fucking tournament. Yeah. What are you talking about?
But he's still slagging off Lillishaw. Yeah. We won the World Cup, but fuck that guy at Lillishaw.
Yeah.
And Clinton Morrison.
Jack, that's something I was going to say to you. I'm amazed. I know how much you love Clinton Morrison. You mentioned this so many times. How have you not mentioned how much he hates Clinton Morrison?
He hates Clinton Morrison, which is, again, part of his amazingly defensive stuff, because he hates Clinton Morrison during a semi-final that Liverpool ultimately win 6-2 on aggregate. And yeah. He finds 3 or 4 pages to go to town on how much Clinton Morrison talks himself up during the match, like explaining, like, oh, here's the reasons why Michael Owen is better than Clinton Morrison. You're like, yeah, we know. Clinton Morrison is. Clinton Morrison had a good season for first division, relegation threatened first division Crystal Palace. I loved that Crystal Palace team, by the way. Like, that is my. If I could go back and play with any team.
That's your Glenn one.
That's my Glenn one. The 2000-2001.
Andy Johnson? Is that
no,
Andy
so
Johnson?
So Clinton Morrison was traded, was like, there was a swap deal to Birmingham.
Yeah,
it was I think it was 5 million plus Andy Johnson for Clinton Morrison, which is one of the worst transfers ever. But, I mean, so it's just crazy how much Steven Gerrard hates Clinton Morrison. It's just baffling. He goes, like, he says he's just a bang average player. He talks himself up all the time. By the end of it, the Liverpool fans were booing him. He, you know, he went behind, well, like, went home with the tail between his legs. It's like, be a bit classy, Steven. Like, appreciate.
Yeah,
it's so petty.
It punches down. I can't think of anyone he criticizes who did better than him. And that might be just because.
Yeah, good point.
He might have been the best player he played against. I can't remember a time he came up against Messi or Ronaldinho or anyone like that. I can't really remember when that happened. All he's got is the option to punch down, but it feels like if Albert Einstein did an autobiography, who was like, let's have a stupid scientist. And you go, oh, come on, man.
Yeah, Tesla was a wanker.
Yeah.
But James, did it meet your expectations?
Do you know what? It was such a long book, but it didn't feel it at all. It really didn't. I actually flew through it, and I think it's just because I know it all so well. It's so interesting to me, all the Liverpool stuff. I found the England stuff more difficult to read because I wasn't as interested.
And it's size 72 font as well, I think that's the thing.
Yeah, true.
Thankfully for all the pages.
It didn't feel that long.
Yeah. Yeah.
I respectfully disagree.
See, yeah.
Jack, let's kick it off with you then. What did you give it out of 10?
I give it a 6.
Okay.
Frankly.
Well, that's not as bad as I thought you were going to give it. Glenn?
I think a 6 as well. It's so. I feel like people, considering it ends, the original version ends just after 2006, people are only really reading it for the two key moments: 2005 Champions League final, 2006 FA Cup final. Those are the two, and Olympiacos in 2005 as well. There's three pivotal matches in two tournaments, and people are reading for that, and there's 698 pages that aren't that, and two pages that are that. And so it's 6 out of 10. It's so poorly managed as a book.
Right. Yeah, I would kind of agree with that. I'm gonna go with a 6 as well, actually. Because I thought it was quite different to some of the books you read in terms of I know it might not have been him who does it, but there was a bit of character to it quite a bit away through it.
When we say character, we mean insecurity. There's insecurity. Yeah. He's deeply insecure.
I like that.
Oh, he's a very characterful player.
Yeah.
Resentment.
The characterful Ted Bundy, yeah.
And James, what did you think of the book?
I, in all honesty, it's not a great book, is it? But it's Stevie G, so 9 out of 10.
Okay, there we go. That's the bias we like on this show. So that's 27 overall, which is 6.75.
I'll take that.
I'm just taken aback that you did maths.
He's gotten very good at that.
Yeah, that's fucking. Yeah, I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. You could have said a million. I'd have gone, correct, yes, average, median.
That's
very
what
good.
Podcast is just a way for me to show off, basically.
James is basically now a genius at dividing anything by 4. That's it.
Yeah, that's true. Before we draw a line under it, anyone got out of context, Steven Gerrard?
Yeah, I really do.
Let's kick off with you, Glenn, then. As you
okay,
guess.
So mine comes on a 340 in which Steven Gerrard describes an abscess. That's so again, this is the sort of thing that marked down the score in the first place. That there was so much that wasn't about the two matches I wanted it to be about. but he describes an abscess, and apologies about the post watershed nature of this. It's not my fault. It's Steven Gerrard's. But he says, worryingly, I arrived in London with a problem, an abscess in my mouth. Murder. The swelling intensified the night before the match. I could feel the pussy liquid inside waiting to erupt. And as a teenager when I read this, it was news to me that pussy is spelt P-U-S-S-Y. And I remember just being like, what chapter have I walked in on? Yes. What a turn this has taken! And out of context, and it's purely a misreading of the word, but no one reads that word as pussy. No one does.
I totally agree. I forgot what the story was as I was reading. I think I zoned out for a second. I was like, oh, hang on, what's going on? I saw that line and yeah.
Is this Jermaine Pennant's autobiography?
Oh my God, yeah. That would have fitted in very well in Jermaine Pennant's one. Beautiful. Jack?
One is just, I love kicking balls as far as I can.
Yep, great, nice.
That sounds like the sort of thing Alan Shearer would say on Match of the Day. Some of the men kick balls very hard, and you go, okay.
That was the working title for the book, I think. Stephen Gerrard, I like to kick balls as far as I can. My one is, I've seen Jeremy's Purple Palace with my own eyes.
Yeah, there we go. We've all gone a bit filthy, haven't we?
Yeah. Jeremy's Purple Palace. When you said you had a filthy one, Glenn, I knew it would be either that or the...
It had to be that. I mean, I remember tweeting about that abscess thing like 5 years ago because it just alarmed me so much. Yes. Also, when I was like 16 or 17 with no output, when the internet was in 2006, all you could do with that information was just build a new website for it. You couldn't go on Twitter.
Yeah,
it's like that Twilight Zone where the person has all the time in the world to read all the books.
It was time now. Yeah, glasses. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
He's like, oh, I've got the perfect line about a pussy. Oh, what am I going to do? But no one to tweet it. Sorry.
Someone finally said the word. So for the quiz this week, you're all named after words Stephen Gerrard uses to describe Clinton Morrison. So Jack, you're cocky Clinton. Glenn, you're Mr. Average. And James, you're a complete prick. So when you know the answer, shout your name out. Whoever says it first, we'll get to answer the question. So question one, what was Stephen Gerrard's favourite book at school? Cocky Clinton, what's the answer?
Of Mice and Men.
Is correct.
He must have read it a thousand times. Yeah. The pages fell apart, apparently.
That was nice.
That was nice.
I don't believe that for a second.
He read it once.
I think I think he read it nonce. I didn't find it an easy book to get through. I just don't believe that Stephen Gerrard really took to it like a duck to water. I just don't believe that.
Didn't he say something like, reading it back is actually quite sad with all the stuff that has recorded? Like, anytime you read it, it's sad. Yeah. It's never a happy book.
First time was a laugh riot.
Question number two. Who did Stephen Gerrard swap shirts with after his England debut against Ukraine?
Oh, shit.
Cocky Clinton.
Cocky Clinton.
No.
It's Oleg Luzhny, isn't it?
Oleg Luzhny is the answer. Arsenal
it's
hero,
baffling because it's not even they swap shirts. It's they get a bunch of soggy Ukrainian shirts delivered to their door. Like it's some kind of drug deal gone wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. Here are your soggy shirts. Move on. Like days after the match.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he had to like rummage. He had to rummage through to find Oleg Luzhny's.
He could have had Rebrov or Shevchenko's. He goes, no, I'll take Luzhny's. Question number three. Who was the king of banter for Liverpool schoolboys?
King of banter.
Glenn, I can't remember my name.
Your name is Mr. Average, Glenn.
Mr. Average. Is it Bellamy?
It isn't Bellamy. It's Bellamy.
Is it David James?
It isn't David James, even though his banter
Cocky Clinton?
Good. Yep.
Is it Jason Kumas?
Nope. Is the answer all this? Danny Murphy.
Oh, shit.
Yeah,
I refuse to believe that.
And finally, what cryptic name does Stephen consider saving his then-girlfriend Alex Curran as on his phone?
Complete prick.
Yes.
Alan something. What the fuck?
Yeah, you're close. You almost said it. You said about three quarters of the surname.
Alan Curran?
No, Alan Cork. I'll give you.
Oh, shit.
Alan Cork is the genius pseudonym he thinks of saving Alex. So he doesn't want the rest of the players in the change room taking his phone and messaging her.
Alan Curran's drag king name?
Yeah.
Performers Alan Cork down the clubs at the weekends.
I swear Alan Cork played for Swansea alongside Gary Monk. I swear he's a player. Cocky Clinton, you've run away with that. And your prize is this week's Ken's song. So Glenn, every week on the show, our friend Ken writes us a chant about a player who's who's long since retired. So far this series, we've had Ricky Martin's Give It to Rio Coker and Danger, Danger, Mark Bosnich. This one, this one to the tune of The Monkees, I'm a Believer. Here we go. Then we saw him play. Now we're all believers. Never gives you space or plays you onside. We're in love with David Wheater. You couldn't beat him if you tried.
I like that one because David Wheater is not like the featured bit of that song.
Yeah.
It takes a long time to get to David Wheater.
It's a real build-up to that, yeah.
It's got
to
be, usually the chart name would come at I'm a Believer.
Yes.
But here, David Wheater is like, it's, you know, six or seven lines down. Well done, Ken.
Very good.
It's like if it did a Hey Jude one and it only fit the player's name at like the 25th nah.
Don't encourage him. He will do that. Another podcast we listen to is 21st Century Football, a podcast all about the best football of the past 21 years. They've spoken about players such as Ronaldo, Zlatan and Ronaldinho on the show, with many more names to come. Search 21st Century Football wherever you get your podcast from. Glenn Moore, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great fun. Thank you.
I'm glad we get to give you the chance again to read this book that clearly meant so much.
No, thank you. I loved it. And honestly, now, all I'm doing now is racking my brains trying to think of a player's name that now fits into the 21st nah. And all I can think of is nah, 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 Mark Viduka. Mark Viduka.
Denver Bar probably fits well.
Denver Bar is so much better.
Denver Bar, yeah.
Stephen Carr. Yeah. There's a few. If you've read Stephen Gerrard's book or any of the books this series, please get in touch with us. Send us any questions, any things you noticed. You can find us at Footy Book Club on Twitter, Instagram, Football Book Club, and or on Facebook. Please drop us a review in the app as well. Guys, thanks so much for today. Any last words?
P-U-S-S-Y.
Hebrew boy.
No, I'm not. You know what it spells.
Puss. Okay, jeez. Good night. We've had enough. Thanks for listening to Football Book Club. It featured James Bug, Glenn Moore, Jack Bernhardt, and James Baljan. It was created by James Bug, and it was a Crowd production. Thanks to Stephen for writing the book, but where are they all now? Well, Stephen Gerrard went on to become one of Liverpool's greatest ever players before writing himself into Rangers history by winning their first league title in a decade. Still not over the literal thing, though. Jerzy Dudek left Liverpool to play for Real Madrid, never quite capturing the same form without Jamie Carragher telling him what to do. God has continued to hate AC Milan, with the team not winning a major trophy in a decade. Glenn's still not totally sure what Nigel Martin looks like, and David James is still folding people into bins. The theme Hills Behind is the work of Silent Partner and is used in a Creative Commons 4.0 license. We'll be back next week with a special wider reading episode where we'll be talking to author, podcaster and journalist Tom Fordyce. Until then, bye bye.
Crowd Network, a place where you belong.